Welcome to the Besties with Breasties podcast. Sarah Hall here. I am a certified health and wellness coach, athletic trainer, mom, and breast cancer survivor. I help women overcome their own mind drama to make mind shifts that open up the possibility for their most empowered and energetic life.
And I am Beth Wilmus, author, speaker, and founder of a human investment organization, otherwise known as a nonprofit, called Faith Through Fire. Our mission is to reduce the fear and anxiety that breast cancer patients feel and replace it with hope and a path toward thriving.
This podcast is about our experiences with breast cancer
and life after as young survivors and moms.
Hello. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning. How are you?
Oh, just great. Oh,
I can hear it. Jamie's already jiggling in the background.
Sorry.
Nope.
Hi, lady.
Hello.
So today's episode, we're going to be talking about our new boot camp, and we couldn't have the conversation about the new boot camp without having Jamie on the call because she's the one that's going to be facilitating it.
Yes, yes.
So hi, Jamie. How are you?
Hi, ladies. I am wonderful and excited to be here.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so can we talk about what caused us to even make this boot camp? It's really all about that transition to survivorship.
Yeah, I think we just saw this gap that, you know, in our program, and we wanted to provide a really needed support, something that would have benefited even us.
Well, I think, okay, so what happens is you go through treatment and it's like a whirlwind.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the dust settles,
mm-hmm.
either, you know, your active or primary treatment. The dust settles and you're looking around and it's like, what just happened?
Yep.
And there's nobody there to help you with that.
Yeah.
That's really, I mean, that's kind of a universal experience.
Yes.
So we wanted to create something that addressed that gap, to your point.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
So Jamie, you've got a little bit of experience in helping people transition from one phase of a life to another, correct?
Yeah. And I've been through it myself. I'm actually walking through that right now.
Yeah. So, you know, you're a survivor just like Sarah and I are. You know mm-hmm. exactly what we're talking about here. Give a little background about your work and what you've kind of done in the past that's going to lend itself to you facilitating these boot camps, besides being a survivor.
Besides being a survivor. So I would lead with that I'm a lifelong learner and I am innately curious about the human spirit and the ability to thrive and overcome in the even ifs in our life. And so I think that what we've all experienced and know is that nobody gets a free pass from hardship in life. And I'm particularly interested in how people work through and integrate trauma in a meaningful way so that they have a sense of purpose and joy in the way they live their life after a traumatic event. I have a background in clinical social work, specifically in mental health. And I also have a dual master's in positive psychology, which lends itself really nicely to creating curious spaces where we can lead from our strengths and be non-judgmental about feelings that come up, thoughts that we have, but in a way that we can redefine and reclaim how we want life to look moving forward.
I love that positive psychology piece, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think so many survivors, and in particular, the people who are drawn to Faith Through Fire,
mm-hmm.
they don't want to be defined by this. They don't want to have mm-hmm. it limit them forever. They really want to get past it and try to figure out how to find that coexistence between joy and grief. They just aren't sure how to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And that positive psychology piece is so important. I would be curious your thoughts on this, Jamie, but I feel as though the science is now telling us that it's not particularly helpful to wallow in what was. You know, a lot of people will say, I just want to go back to the way it was before. Well, that's not particularly helpful. It's more about what is and where do you want to go and how are you going to get there? Do you feel that way too?
Yeah. So I think it's fair to say that when one experiences cancer, there's a death to the life that we knew, which creates space for the birth of something we haven't yet experienced. And that's the space and the tension that we want to play in. And I use the word play because we're all coming with different social contracts and different ways in which we navigated the world. And it's an invitation to grow and evolve in a way that's helpful and meaningful so that it didn't just happen to us, but it happened for us and we're allowed to create new from it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. So today we're going to talk about, first of all, the struggles that you might face in survivorship.
And then we're going to talk about why we created the boot camp and how it's different than other survivorship programs that are out there.
Yeah, and we'll finish up with who is it for? How do you sign up? But before we do that, let's hear from our first sponsor. Anne's Bra Shop features skilled mastectomy fitters ready to assist you in selecting the perfect breast forms, bras, swimsuits, and camisoles for your post-surgery needs. They have three locations in the St. Louis area, Chesterfield in Wentzville, Missouri, across the river in O'Fallon, Illinois, and a fourth location south on I-55 in Cape Girardeau. Visit Anne's Bra Shop at www.brashop.com to learn more. Okay, we're back. Let's talk about some of the issues that come up in survivorship. What comes up for you, Jamie, when you think about life after you kind of get done with active or primary treatment?
Well, I think you set up the conversation beautifully. I still giggle that I have all these tools in my toolbox. I'm aware of what's happening, and yet I still experience that fallout that you alluded to. And I actually remember calling you one day after I finished treatment and I rang the bell and I was like, I feel awful. What is this? And you were like, oh, it's the fallout.
It's the emotional fallout phase. Enjoy it. Yeah, it's normal. It's actually a sign of healing. Yeah. I thought it was funny that you thought you were going to get out of it just because you are
because of your background.
Yeah, because of your background. We thought that was really cute.
So cute.
Yeah, but super cute. Yeah, nobody's immune from it. And you know what I think is interesting about the emotional fallout phase? For Sarah, it happened fairly quickly afterward. For you, it happened fairly quickly afterward, I feel. And for me, it didn't happen until 2 years later.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are women that we meet that are 5 years out or 7 years out. And often I'll talk to a nurse and they'll say, oh my gosh, this woman in my survivorship clinic, she's doing great. She's 7 years out. Why is she such a mess? And I'm like, well, because she never closed that trauma loop. Mm-hmm. And I said, and when you don't have, you know, when you don't close that, you're going to be kind of stuck.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of amazed that it's not more of an issue within the medical system, but it's not. And it can happen years afterward. If you don't address it, it's going to sit there and it's going to impact your life.
Yep.
So yeah, I mean, you felt awful, and what we tell people is you can't really rush that phase, and that's what really stinks, is that you have to almost just sit in it.
100%.
Yeah.
I like to think of it as if we have a table of all of our emotions and experiences, the grief is just something we have to invite to sit with us and see what we can learn from it, because that is the door that you have to walk through in order to integrate this in a meaningful way. I would say some of the struggles are, I remember there was such a predictable routine with treatment, right? So they scheduled everything for me. I knew when I had to show up. I knew that although I hated the way I felt after treatment, it was doing the job. And when it was finished, there was just this unsettling feeling. Was it enough? Did it do what it was supposed to? What do I do now with the time freedom, so to speak, that I'm not sitting in a hospital room? You know, all of those things that, like, the plan was removed, and now what do I do with my time in a way that I feel, am I putting protective factors in place? Am I getting back to routines that are productive and helpful? All of those things are disrupted because you no longer have someone else telling you where to be and when. Kind of that, you know, that predictable.
I think there's a comfort. There was for me anyway, a comfort in having a singular focus for the first time in my life.
Yeah.
I did not, you know, what often happens when people get diagnosed with cancer is that they realize how many things that they felt about before don't matter anymore. Yeah. So you let all that, that's kind of one of the silver linings of cancer, is you let all that fall back and your singular focus is your health, your well-being, getting through treatment, doing those things. And so,
and the interesting thing too is that other people respect that.
Yeah, like they let you have that moment.
They let you have that moment where you're allowed to, like, say no to going to something because it's like, oh, I'm busy doing something. And people let you do it instead of having some weird guilt that, like, oh, but why won't you? And then when that all falls away, it now, you know.
Yeah, you have to go back to, like, regular life.
Yes.
But that was my favorite part of going through cancer, was just having a singular focus, and it was just, all I had to worry about was this one thing. I didn't have to check emails. you know, people were stepping in and helping me in a way that I had never allowed before, would never allow because I was perfectly capable myself. And so you're right. Yeah, you get in that predictable routine. There's comfort in having a singular focus. And then when that ends, you have to go back to life as normal, quote unquote. And now you start getting bombarded with all these things, right? It's fear of recurrence or disease progression. It's survivor's guilt. It's quality of life issues. It's relationship changes. It's body image issues. You know, it's depression or anxiety. Feeling disconnected from yourself, others, you know, or God is something we talk about in the boot camp. So, I mean, it's not a small thing. And I think a lot of people, and we hear this a lot from our members, oh, you got through treatment. Great. Now you're done. You can just, you know, go back to who you were. Well, that's not really a thing anymore.
Yeah.
And right, I don't know. And, you know, a lot of people struggle because their loved ones are well-meaning, but they don't get that.
Yeah. And, you know, the time when you're grappling, I think, with those things is when people might come to you and say something like, "Why?" Although these are the loved ones that know that they can be vulnerable and authentic with you. You're not acting like yourself, or you seem a little different. Mm. People will point those things out and you're already feeling it inside, but you're just like, is it showing?
Well, or you have people, they'll say things to us like, and this will be a indicator to me that they haven't closed this trauma loop. My family's so sick of me talking about cancer. Mm-hmm. I feel guilty when I keep bringing it up because they want me to be over it and I'm not over it. And then I bring it up and they feel exhausted by it.
Yeah.
They want me to just move on.
Yep.
But I can't.
Yeah.
And that's a clear sign
that
you need to maybe ask for some additional support.
Yeah.
Are there any other things, Jamie, that you think kind of stick out as to a clear indicator that maybe it's time to call in the troops for some reinforcements?
Well, I think it's important for, I mean, your listeners know there's a faith component. And I remember you and I talking that, you know, you felt closest to God during treatment, and I experienced some of the same. And I found that post-treatment, my relationship with self changed, my relationship with others and with God. And so they were all sitting there for me to figure out what I wanted, how I wanted to move in them. And so I think that when we start, it's kind of like what you said, your radar of like the things that don't matter anymore is high. And yet sometimes we don't give ourselves permission to move in that direction. And so the group is a really beautiful space to reflect and reclaim what we want to keep doing, what we want to stop doing, and what we want to start doing. Mm-hmm. And so I just think it's all of that.
I think there's this huge opportunity. It's like cancer can be the catalyst for you to live your best life, right? Because everybody reevaluates what they care about, where their values are, what's important to them.
Yeah.
And if you weren't honoring that before cancer, this is your opportunity to honor it post. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I attribute cancer to me living my best life now. It would not have happened without that trauma. So, I mean, that's the encouragement, people. If you're listening and you're feeling like dog poo, Sarah's giving me a look. Did you not like it that I said dog poo?
Oh, no, I thought dog poop was fine. I dropped my paper.
Oh, I was like, Sarah just gave me a look. I'm like, is dog poo too far? Did I take it too far?
Gosh, what a curse word.
I know.
But no, dog poop is actually accurate.
Yeah.
Accurate.
Well, before we kind of jump in, why we created it, why it's different. Do you guys want to do Boobs in the News?
Yes.
Let's do it. Boobs in the News is a fun segment where we read funny tweets by real people or ridiculous news stories.
Boobs in the News! Boobs in the News! Boobs in the News!
All right. This one says a groundhog made headlines in Pennsylvania, which was actually about an hour away from Punxsutawney, interestingly enough. But not for predicting the weather. Fun seekers playing the claw machine at a local arcade recognized that one of the, quote, stuffed animals was blinking back at them.
Oh, sorry.
Oh my gosh, those claw machines. My kids love those.
Oh, I know.
Every time we go somewhere, they want a beeline for that. And you know, that thing has to make a fortune.
A fortune.
They'll spend like 10 bucks on those things.
I do like the ones that are filled with the rubber duckies where they let them win every time. Like they play until they win.
Yeah, but they get a rubber ducky.
Yeah, who cares? At least they get something.
I mean, I guess. My kids always want the stuffed animal. So apparently, I'm going to make the guess that the groundhog somehow got in the machine and was like literally in there. Yep. It says the manager basically of a frozen custard and mini golf isn't sure how the critter got in, but said it almost took an army to release the rodent.
I wonder how long. I think they're vicious.
Well, I'm also thinking that he's probably in there pooping on all the animals.
This regardless of the animals, I think it would just be funny if he was just holding still, just laid out like cozy on top of all the stuffed animals, like, I'm living my best life.
Well, it says employees contacted the machine's owners, who passed the buck to the police department. Yeah, I mean, what do you want the owners to do? If they called
I'm
me about my
they even called the police. Why didn't they call like animal control?
Animal control, yeah, like that's their area.
Oh my gosh. So you know, the police were just this like groundhog.
I think the person, it might be the person that called the police instead of animal control. Can you imagine those poor first responders? Like, hey, we're busy.
Yeah.
Okay. So it says, oh, I don't know who game wardens are, but they called the game warden. Oh, no.
Oh, game warden. Yeah.
Okay. No. So the police department then called the Pennsylvania Game Commission, and game wardens were able to open the machine and set the rodent. Oh, they named him. Do you want to know what his name was?
Phil.
Colonel Custard.
Oh, hilarious.
They let him go in a nearby field. Okay. They wasted no time capitalizing on the incident, making t-shirts that said respect the groundhog and naming a frozen treat flavor after their furry visitor. Well, there you go.
That was famous.
What a great marketing opportunity.
I mean,
I do think it's a little odd that they had to go through three agencies before they figured out how to get rid of them. But
gosh,
is there a boom in the storm?
Are they protected?
Groundhogs?
Yeah.
I don't know. Are they endangered?
I don't know.
This is
clearly not. They're hanging out.
I was going to say, we'll just do it really quick. Are groundhogs,
like, you know, you can't kill a Canadian goose or something.
Endangered.
And those things infest you.
Well, I mean, there's lots of animals. I guess groundhogs are listed as least concern for extinction.
Oh, okay. All right. There you go. They're not protected then, I'm sure.
They're like squirrels.
Maybe they'll start doing hunting for population control.
Oh my gosh.
You want to go groundhog?
Can you eat a groundhog?
Oh, I'm sure you can eat anything.
Okay. Oh, this is funny. This coming on the heels, Jamie, yesterday I saw my very first in person, not roadkill, armadillo.
He was really cute.
Never see them alive. I've seen one live one in my whole life.
They are adorable. They look adorable. Tiny rhinos.
They're pretty happy. Cute.
Oh, they're so happy. He just was like wiggling his little ears and he was just snout in the ground.
You know
so
what?
Cute.
That's how it happens before they attack you.
Yeah. So I also think raccoons are the cutest things in the world because they look like
mean.
They have tiny little bandit masks on.
Yeah, but they're
and they
mean.
Have hands.
They do have hands. They do have hands. Well, Sarah shows me this video because she took a hike the other day and came across this little guy. And I was like, this looks like you're really close. She goes, oh, I was super close. And I'm thinking, this is exactly how it happens, right?
It took everything within me not to just
reach out and touch him
and grab him.
Well,
like
then your mother-in-law was like, he probably has rabies.
Well, and that I'm a little terrified of rabies right now. So
yeah, rabies are not good. Yeah. All right, there's your boobs in the news.
Oh my gosh. Maybe we're the boobs.
We might be in the boobs.
Bibs in the news. Bibs in the news. Bibs in the news.
Okay, so we're back. Let's talk about the difference between our boot camp and other support groups, because I think it's an important distinction, right?
We've been asked a lot to do support groups, like over and over and
over.
Oh
my gosh.
You guys should do a support group. You guys should do a support group.
Well, no, but not by patients. And here's why. Because patients...
I've had a couple people say...
Well, they'll ask if we have something because they're struggling.
Yeah.
But they've never been to one. The people who have been to them usually are not fans because they haven't... a negative experience. So that's been my experience. The people that say, I'm struggling, I'm kind of freaking out, do you guys have a support group? That's because they're in the emotional fallout stage and they're looking for additional support. That I get. The problem that we've heard from other survivors and kind of seen ourselves firsthand is that support groups have their place and they can be really good, but they can also be really bad.
Yeah.
So
because you get a mixed bag of people.
First of all, usually they're held within a medical facility, which a lot of survivors liken to returning to the scene of the crime.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very sterile environment often. Mm-hmm. It smells like alcohol. I mean, I don't like spending time in hospitals.
And sometimes you get a mixture of different types of cancers and different
stages.
Yeah,
so it's not always just... Yeah, exactly. You get a mixed bag of people, stages, cancers, things like that. Sometimes, you know, really a traditional support group, the purpose behind them is to kind of bond through shared experiences. Mm-hmm. But what we'll see happen over and over again is people will go wanting to feel better and they leave feeling worse.
Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts on that, Jamie?
Yeah, so... One of the things we paid acute attention to is creating a culture of this group that when we come together, there's going to be kind of working agreements, norms that we're going to abide by to keep all of us in a productive forward momentum space with respect and care for one another. And so that's how we kind of set the foundation. I would also say that it is a group that's meant to come together that has an active mindset around healing. So it's not passive. There's active forward momentum, and we use tools and we apply tools and we wrestle with that. And there's homework. Facilitation of the group becomes very important, as well as the culture of the group.
We also give a, it's not a test. What's it called, Jamie? Where a screening
assessment.
Tool? Assessment. Thank you. Assessment sounds much better. We'll give an assessment to people who want to participate to gauge their readiness mm-hmm. for this type of work, because we have in the past identified people who are still so actively traumatized that they're not going to benefit from the material. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that there's a very specific phase, and we talk about the phases of healing for the breast cancer patient in particular. There's a very specific phase of healing that I think you need to be in order for you to gain the most from this. Would you agree with that, Jamie?
Yeah. So from a clinical perspective, there are times in our life when we need to do the work of really clinical one-on-one counseling to kind of go back to childhood and address initial harms or traumas. This work starts with the present day and where we want to move forward. So it takes, and we have support for people that might benefit more in this phase with one-on-one counseling. You know, we get them set up with that, but this group really is for people that are grounded in the present and ready to move forward.
Yeah, I think that's an important distinction too.
And we're keeping the groups at a very specific size, and we've talked through that and piloted what would work and what wouldn't. So one thing to note, if you on the logistical side of things, because, you know, that's my jam. If you don't get in right away, it's not because we identified you as not ready. It just might.
There's a waiting list and then you'll get the assessment and all of that. Yeah, but that's a good point. And we're also setting these boot camps up for, there's in person, which is what Jamie's facilitating. Mm-hmm. Then there's online.
Correct.
Which they can do with Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're self-guided.
Self-guided.
So there's three options based on what your needs are and where you're located. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's important to note as well.
Yeah.
But we give the GAD-7, which is an anxiety assessment. Mm-hmm. You know, it's different than the readiness assessment, but it's an anxiety assessment to kind of see where you are as a baseline. In our last group, for example, and you have all different people at all different stages, so it's really going to vary somewhat. But some of these people were seeing 70, 80% reductions in anxiety. The overall group had an average of about 40%.
Yeah.
But when you're feeling really anxious and depressed and just not sure where to go forward, I mean, it was pretty remarkable.
And I think what's so interesting about that is, and maybe this is from my own experience, is that when you're in that anxiety trauma loop, like just making a decision can be really hard. Like you're thinking, oh, I need to be eating different, or I want to incorporate exercise because my doctor told me that it would be good for me, or reduce my recurrence rates, or I heard this stat or whatever. But it's almost like you can't even take a step forward because you just are so traumatized and you need to work through some of that. So even seeing a 40% reduction sometimes can help you make that first step to then where you see another reduction and another reduction. So
I think you're hitting on the primary, you know, thought of the entire boot camp, which is that something that's not being talked about in cancer care right now is that getting diagnosed with cancer is a traumatizing event. Mm-hmm. And so can you, and this is something I want you to answer, Jamie, can you move beyond that trauma if you're not even, you don't even understand that you've been traumatized? You don't understand what trauma mm-hmm. is. You don't understand how it manifests. We spend a fair amount of time talking about what is trauma? What does it look like? What are the signs and symptoms? And most people are absolutely shocked to say, because women are very resilient, right? So they'll say, oh, this is, you know, there's people that have it so much worse. And, you know, of course this happened to me, but I want to make good out of it. And they kind of don't want
skip over.
or they don't feel comfortable. I didn't feel comfortable admitting that I had been traumatized by my diagnosis. That felt very vulnerable to me. But you can't change what you don't understand.
Yeah.
And so we spend a lot of time, time talking about what is trauma. What does it look like in the context of a breast cancer diagnosis? Because you can't go through these mutilating surgeries and chemotherapy.
Change your body, possibly lose your hair.
You know, changing the dynamics of your family. I mean, I think it's really interesting how we've gotten desensitized to all of it mm-hmm. as a society, because breast cancer is talked about so often. It's 1 in 8 women. And it's so desensitizing at this point, but it's very, very traumatic. I mean, I don't know. Am I overstating it?
No. And I would add that there's so much power in naming things and then allowing there to be space between that and movement. And so I think what the boot camp does beautifully is connect what's happening in the mind and the body, because they're protective mechanisms, right? That denial served a purpose at some point. It might no longer be serving each of us, just like our trauma responses. You know, we unpack the different ways in which we react to trauma, and the degree to which we can connect the mind and the body and what's happening, we're able to more quickly identify what's at play and what we can do differently as we build tools in our toolbox. So it's super empowering, but it's based in science. And it starts with that awareness of what's even happening.
I think also that something that's kind of exciting for the people that have participated so far is that we do empower them with tools that maybe they weren't thinking about. So one of the things that people really loved is the whole concept of neuroplasticity. And I think the reason that this appeals to people is because something that cancer patients are always told is that they need to embrace their new normal. And if their new normal sucks, it's really hard to be like, yay, I have neuropathy and brain fog and my relationship with my husband's weird now. And, you know, I feel like I have all this stuff, this baggage, and I'm supposed to embrace this, and they don't want to embrace it. And I think we're kind of turning that on its head and saying, well, your brain feels this way now, but it doesn't have to. You can, you know, neuroplasticity is a real thing. It takes intentionality and work, but you can change the way that your brain perceives this experience, right?
Amen.
Yeah. So we say, I mean, I don't think it's too bold to say you don't have to accept this new normal. You can create your new normal and you can love it.
And it's I thought it was really empowering, the fact that I think, Jamie, you talked about it, how you're in the driver's seat to make this what you want it to be. And you do have to be intentional about putting in time and making it something better for yourself.
I will say that that's, you know, that's hard for patients. I'll say, listen, it can feel really rough that you had to go through all this.
And now you have to do more work.
But, you know, if you want the change, you have to do it, because nobody else is going to care as much as you do.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to advocate for yourself. You got to be in that headspace. And I don't know, is it too blunt to say you can't really have that victim mentality? Is that harsh?
I think we are shifting from that being our sole focus to acknowledging it exists. Because I will say, you know, there are moments where I'm like, man, I wish I still had breasts, or I don't like how I kind of have this chronic issue from treatment. I just don't want to stay there. So it's not a disregarding or dismissal of those things that make us sad or that we're disappointed, because those are real losses and things, lymphedema, like there's things that we have to navigate. And it's not this Pollyanna approach like, oh, I'm alive, therefore everything's wonderful. But it's that we don't stay in those spaces. We acknowledge them. And then we say, you know what, but I get to choose how I respond. And that's where that neuroplasticity and flexing that muscle comes in. We rewire the pathways. We challenge the fact versus the lie and what our thoughts are. You know, what do I know in this present moment? So we are actively challenging our own thinking. And from that becomes different action. And there's so much power in that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I love this. So let's talk about, who is this for? If you're listening and you're wondering, is this for me? I think that there's a few things that kind of start to pop up for survivors, and you guys can add to these. I think, you know, there's always that initial excitement of completing treatment and you're ringing that bell and you have this new lease on life, right? Life is precious. I'm going to seize the day. I did it. I did the hardest part. But that excitement tends to peter off.
Uh-huh.
And you're left with all those questions, right?
Yeah.
That Jamie alluded to at the beginning. So if you felt like the excitement of completing initial or primary treatments weren't off, you might be ready. If you feel confused by your new post-cancer identity and you're struggling to accept your quote unquote new normal, this might be a good time to join the boot camp. If you want to enjoy life again, but you feel stuck in a cycle of negative emotions, I'd say this might be a good time to consider joining. And if you feel disconnected from yourself, others, or God, that's how I knew I was in trouble. I felt disconnected from life. You know, yeah. All three of those things were struggling for me. Yeah. I was, and we do spend some time on that in the boot camp. I just felt disconnected. I didn't feel like I was present.
Oh, yeah. I remember one exact word I used was like, I feel like I'm watching my life instead of being living it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can we spend a minute talking too about, and it's mostly women. We have men in our program too, but can we talk about people's tendency to find reasons not to pour into themselves in this way? Because it's really frustrating for me to watch. We have women all, it's hard.
I hate it.
It's hard because they'll
but it's probably more frustrating for you because you've done the work and that was once you.
Oh yeah. We've all been there. Yeah. We've all been there. It's like with my kids, right? I tell my kids, I'm trying to save you the grief of having to learn the hard way.
Yeah.
Just do what I'm telling you to do because you'll get there faster.
Because I've already done it.
Because I've already done it, right? Yeah. I've walked that path. But you can, to that point, you can never walk somebody else's path. It's their timeline.
Yeah.
Grief knows no bounds, right? You don't have a timeline on it. So you got to know when you're ready. But I see this over and over and over again. I really want to do this for myself, but my daughter really needs me right now. Or I really want to do this right now, but I don't know if I can make the time after work because of XYZ.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts around that, Jamie? Do you think, I mean, I get really frustrated by it because I'm thinking if cancer isn't enough of a reason for you to do this for yourself, what is?
Yeah. I mean, we're fighting social norms for generations, generations of being nurturers, care providers, other-centered. And you're right. It is something that happens that requires us to go inward. However, I do believe the perception of an expectation to get back at it when you're quote unquote done with treatment is real. And without us pouring in, that is such a huge piece of this, that taking the time to put that oxygen mask on and figure out who you are, what you need, setting those boundaries, all those things. And I'll say, I believe you actually had someone in the pilot group that thought about not coming, and you basically gave it right back to her, just as you just said, and she showed up and it was life changing. And so
it was, and she was very much
actually two people.
There were two people out of the group. One, it was because she had a family member that was really struggling, and she thought that it was selfish of her to prioritize herself when her family member was suffering. And the other one was just having scheduling issues because she babysat for a family member. And we're always going to respect your choice. You know, it's totally your choice. But we did gently encourage them to put themselves first and make the commitment. And both of them were just
so
was the one that experienced like a 75% reduction in anxiety. I mean, it was life altering for her.
Yeah.
And as a byproduct of her taking care of herself, when I asked about her family member later, she's like, oh, she's doing great. I'm doing great. We're in a really good place. And I thought, see, that's what can happen.
Yeah.
I know my kids are better.
Put your oxygen mask on first kind of moment. Yeah.
Right. But it's so real. People always want to just push themselves to the back burner and they don't do it. And I just keep thinking to myself, what's the worst thing that's going to, you have everything
to
lose.
On the heels of a cancer diagnosis where, you know, this is kind of going back to the point I alluded to in the beginning, is that when you are vulnerable and say, I'm struggling post-cancer and I would like to take these six 1 hour sessions, it's over 12 weeks, six 1 hour sessions to like become a better person, learn about what I'm struggling with, and maybe come out more on top. If someone doesn't respect that, I think you need to look at that relationship. You know, that maybe is a relationship you need to heal. So, you know, if you're going to ask for time for yourself, there's no better reason.
Yeah, that's a whole nother issue. When people are afraid of their family's reactions to them setting a hard boundary and saying, I'm doing this for myself, I'm going to need you to make another, you know, make other accommodations while I go through this. You're exactly right. That's a relationship that needs to be examined.
Right.
You know, so. Well,
and here's the deal. Faith Through Fire at the very center of this organization is to improve the mental health landscape in the cancer scene. It is just an area that is not, just like mental health in general, you know, you have a physical, if you're a burn victim or you have a traumatic, and you know, we do have trauma to our body and it maybe shows or doesn't show, like we tend to, I'm air quoting, but look normal to outs, you know, people with clothes on, but we know what's happened. However, we wouldn't tell a burn patient, don't go to your physical therapy, don't do all the modalities you need to to condition and heal your skin, right? Like that is an accepted norm in society. However, once we get through the physical treatment of cancer, there's such a gap in how we navigate what happened emotionally, spiritually, mentally to us. And so in the same way, we're challenging that narrative. We have to take time to sit with this pain, to figure out how to integrate it, to have purpose again, to set boundaries, to reassess everything in our life, what we can get rid of, what we want to infuse. And so it's so important. And the three of us are so passionate about it, and we will hold space for people. And I would just encourage, the only way through is through. Trust the process, show up, and you'll know intuitively whether or not it's the right thing for you on day one. I can guarantee that.
Mm-hmm. Before we kind of wrap up, let's hear from our second sponsor.
Thrivent is a proud sponsor of Faith Through Fire. Thrivent believes money is a tool and not a goal. The Gateway Financial Group with Thrivent is local to the St. Louis area and can work with you to create a financial strategy that reflects your priorities and helps you protect the things that matter to you, like family and giving back. Please call 314-783-4214 to schedule a free consultation with one of Thrivent's Gateway Financial Advisors.
So let's talk about where people can sign up. So yep. There's a waiting list. What you do is you go on faiththroughfire.org, you go under resources, and there's going to be a drop down and there's going to say survivorship bootcamp. And if yep. you go to that page, there's a form, you fill it out. And when a spot becomes available, we're going to contact you and give you next steps to get involved. But yep. that's it, basically, in a nutshell.
It's super easy.
Super easy, guys. And we want to see you there. We know you can benefit from it. We're doing this for you because we mm-hmm. know it's a need mm-hmm. and your future self's going to thank you. So thanks, Jamie, for hopping on and just being part of the discussion. We're so excited to be doing this with you. And we're just, yeah, it's going to
yeah.
be great.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure and an honor. Thanks, ladies.
All right, guys. Until next time.
See ya.
Thank you for being a listener of the Besties with Breasties podcast. If this podcast had a positive impact on your journey, leave us a review or consider becoming a supporter. You can donate with the link in the show notes or at faiththroughfire.org. This episode was hosted by Sarah Hall and Beth Wilmes, audio and production edits by Innovative Frequencies.